ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
to 5th chapter text 44
Shuka uvacha pratichagraha tadbadham narada sadu sammatah etavan sadu vadohi titikshiteshwarah swayam
Shri, word to word translation. Muni is an approved saintly person. When cursed by Prajapati Daksha, he replied, Tad Badham, yes, what you have said is good. I accept this curse. He could have cursed Prajapati Daksha in return, but because he is a tolerant and merciful sadhu, he took no action. Purport. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Titikshava karunikah suhridah sarvadehina ajatashatravah shantah sadavah sadhubhushanah. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies, he is peaceful, he abides by the scriptures and all his characteristics are sublime. Because Narad Muni is the most elevated of sadhus, devotees to deliver Prajapati Daksha, he has silently tolerated the curse. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught this principle to all his devotees. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manitena kirtaniyah sadaharihi. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Following the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one who preaches the glories of the Lord all over the world or all over the universe should be humbler than grass and more tolerant than a tree. Because a preacher cannot live in easy-going life. Indeed, a preacher must face many impediments. Not only is he sometimes cursed, but sometimes he must also suffer personal injury. For example, when Nityanand Prabhu went to preach Krishna consciousness to the two roguish brothers, Jagahai and Madhai, they injured him and made his head bleed. But nevertheless, he tolerantly delivered the two rogues, who became perfect Vaishnavas. This is the duty of a preacher. Lord Jesus Christ even tolerated crucifixion. Therefore, the curse against Narada was not very astonishing, and he tolerated it. Now, it may be asked why Narad Muni stayed in the presence of Prajapati Daksha and tolerated all his accusations and curses. Was that for Daksha's deliverance? The answer is yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that after being insulted by Prajapati Daksha, Narad Muni should have left immediately. But he purposely stayed to hear all Daksha's strong words so that Daksha might be relieved of his anger. Prajapati Daksha was not an ordinary man. He had accumulated the results of many pious activities. Therefore, Narad Muni expected that after delivering his curse, Daksha, satisfied and freed from anger, would repent his misbehavior and thus get a chance to become a Vaishnava and be delivered. When Jagai and Madhai offended Lord Nityanand, Lord Nityanand stood tolerantly, and therefore both brothers fell at his lotus feet and repented. Consequently, they later became perfect Vaishnavas. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 5th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Narad Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha. Sri Shukdev Goswami continued, My dear King, since Narad Muni is an approved saintly person, when cursed by Prajapati Daksha, he replied, Tad Badham, yes, what you have said is good. I accept this curse.
So he could have cursed Prajapati Daksha in return, but because he is tolerant and merciful, sadhu, he took no action. Hare Krishna. So, actually this topic today is on tolerance. So, I have no qualifications because I personally don't have too much tolerance. So, I thought that Krishna has chosen this verse for me so that I can get purified. So we see that how in this purport that Narad Muni is being a preacher is faced with a reversal. He's faced with an opposition, a very hurting situation where he's trying to help actually the sons of Daksha, but in turn he gets cursed. And Prabhupada writes that this is going to happen in every preacher's life. In his career as a preacher, he's going to face it, there's no doubt. Just like yesterday was Christmas. And Prabhupada quotes Jesus Christ. And how Jesus Christ we can see in his life, even while he was preaching, he knew that the day when he was going out to preach, he knew that when he goes out, he will be arrested by the Pharisees of that time. Something like the caste Brahmins who opposed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his pastimes. But still Jesus Christ went out on that day knowing well that he is going to be arrested and severe action is going to be taken against him. And rightly so, he was arrested. And they put him under pressure. They told him that you give up this so-called preaching of yours, wind up, stop your preaching, and we will release you. So Jesus Christ, he experienced an opposition, and it would have been very convenient for him to actually just pack up his preaching program. That's all it took for him to live. But Jesus Christ preached nevertheless. And what is the consequence? They crucified him. They killed him, actually. Murdered him. And what a brutal murder. I mean, you know, generally when people, you know, when they're asked how would they like to die, no one would like to die in such a brutal and such a cruel way of being, you know, nailed alive to the cross. So what is the tolerance level of Jesus Christ? In fact, there was even a movie, it seems, which was made on the blood of the Christ or something, the passion of the Christ, something like that, just extolling the tolerance level of Jesus Christ. That how, when there was an opportunity to just conveniently stop preaching for the time being, but he did not. He was a very bold preacher. We can see in the life of saints in all religions, not just in Vaishnava tradition, even in Islam, if you see Muhammad, he was so tolerant, he was so compassionate. It seems, I was told that when Muhammad would walk up down the streets, people would throw garbage on his head regularly. But he would tolerate it and still never harbor any malicious intentions. He would always forgive. And it so happened once that the person who regularly threw garbage on his head did not throw garbage one day. And he became inquisitive and Muhammad went to the top to find out what happened to him. And he found that he was sick. And he nursed him back to health. And looking at this, this man became so moved that the person I was insulting, criticizing and abusing is taking the time out and so lovingly and gently is taking care of me. And that was how they could bring about a transformation in the hearts of people. So we can see this one very important quality. One thing is that we can be assured that if we are preaching, there is going to be opposition. Like we see that all these preachers have faced opposition. Even in Chaitanya Leela, we see how Srivas Thakur, who was a very intimate associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Gopal Chappal, a caste Brahmin, being very envious of the position of Shiva's being very intimate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wanted to, you know, assassinate his character by, you know, keeping some Kali worship paraphernalia outside his house. That was an opposition, a severe opposition, a threat against his image in the society. But how did Gopal Chapal react? How did Srivas react to Gopal Chapal's, you know, such a behavior? It is explained he went out to all the so-called civilized neighbors and told them, just see, now you know what is my position. I am a worshipper of Kali. I'm not a Vaishnav, because Vaishnav was considered higher in the society. So he did not really care about his image. He was not very concerned about defending his position of having any position in the society. So we can see how the devotees face so much of opposition in the wake of preaching or in the wake of just being a devotee, basically. Like we can see now in Kazakhstan, you know, just being a devotee is so difficult. And the devotees' houses were broken down by the government. And all it takes is to just change, convenient. It's just not be a devotee. So, just being a devotee is so much of a problem. So much of a problem. But still, a person may ask, why? Why do devotees have to suffer like this? So, it's simple. Just like a son inherits the property of the father, he also inherits the enemies of the father. Like, if father has enemies, he's the enemies of the son also. And if father's got some good friends, then he's also the friend of the son. So similarly, when we are taking up to the, when we accepted Krishna as a father, a guide, a master, then naturally there are going to be enemies. Because as soon as Krishna was born, he had so many enemies. So who are the enemies? The philosophers, mundane philosophers, the scientists, the atheists, basically they're all against Krishna and want to kill him by their body, mind and words. They want to destroy Krishna. So naturally we are going to stand against these kind of people. So this is natural. We have to accept this and expect this, that there is going to be opposition. Just like, you know, Gokulanand Prabhu was telling me one pastime, that how when he was going book distribution once in the train. So he was distributing books, Bhagavad Gita, and there was a man from another faith. He was a lame man, but he was sitting on the, you know, train shelf where you stack the, you know, what do you call this, you know, luggage and things like that. So he was in the luggage carrier and he was sitting comfortably reclining and he was looking at him distributing books. And it's a common thing, right? When we distribute books, you know, we have oppositions. Why are you putting a table here? Get lost from here. Don't make noise. Who gave you permission? Etc., etc. There's another opposition. So he was looking at him and he was telling, so Sadhu Maharaj, kya bech rahe ho? What are you selling? So he looked at him and he said, you know, I'm selling Bhagavad Gita. Then he became envious and he started saying that, you know, why is your faith telling you to worship a personal God? You are worshipping putlas and all these dolls. This is so bad. Why are you worshipping material things? So it so happened that along with him, there were some other sabjiwalas and, they were kind of Hindus. So they all looked at him, at Prabhuji, and told, bolo, bolo, Sadhu Maharaj. Defend yourself. We are waiting. So he spoke. He said that, our preacher is the expert. He said, well, you also worship your holy book. It's made out of earth. Why do you worship it? Because you see divinity in it. Similarly, there is divinity in the deity. That's why we worship. Even though it's made of earth, there is divinity. We worship it. It's non-different from God. When he heard that, he could not tolerate it, it seems. He became furious and he went blaspheming devotees and, you know, things like that. And what could he do? He just simply tolerated it. Just simply tolerated it. But Krishna could not tolerate somehow. So those sabjiwalas, they were there and they said, Sadhu Maharaj, abhi aapka kaam khatam, aap piche hatiye. And then they raised their sleeves and they started hammering him left and right. So, devotees have to face oppositions, but they really don't do anything much to defend themselves because, you know, they give up eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So that department goes to the department of the Lord, the protection. And nevertheless, we see that the Lord makes arrangements. The Lord makes arrangements. So we can see that in various such examples in the Shastras. One such example is that of Quraysh. We see in the South Indian Acharya's stories. In the life of Ramanujacharya, the Chola king, he wanted to kill Ramanujacharya. Because Ramanujacharya was a very big preacher. And he was really bringing about a lot of transformation, making people into Vaishnavas. So this Chola king, who was a Shaivite basically, his name was Tolu Tunga. He couldn't tolerate people being converted to Vaishnavism, Sri Vaishnavism. So he schemed to kill Ramanujacharya. And we know the story that he sent messengers to Srirangam to call for Ramanujacharya to Kanchipuram, where he was based. So Quraysh, the disciple of Ramanujacharya, when he understood there's something going on, there's something fishy, there is some threat which he foresaw. So he volunteered. He said, Ramanujacharya, I feel it is better that, you know, that you stand back, you stay back. I will go disguised as Ramanujacharya. And let Mahapurna accompany me also, so we both can go and see what is the situation. So he went, and Tolu Tunga, when he saw him, he made him sit very nicely and spoke to him very wonderfully and then told him that, please tell us, instruct us what we should be doing, what is the duty of every person. So he boldly preached. He knew that there was opposition. He knew that he did not like what they preached. But he said, Lord Vishnu, Narayana is the supreme. Everyone must surrender to Lord Narayana. Boldly. Fearless. Tolu Tunga was outraged that he could speak like this in front of him. So he said, these are the scholars who are there in my court. They will tell you what is the highest philosophy. Accept it or die. And the scholars began speaking on all misinterpretation and pseudo-philosophy. And Quraysh, very easily, because Quraysh was such a great scholar, he was known for his penetrating intelligence and photographic memory. He effortlessly defeated the arguments of those scholars. And they were dumbfounded. Being defeated, he could not tolerate. Tolu Tunga immediately said, accept or die. Accept Lord Shiva is greater than Lord Narayana. He said, Shiva, even a Drona is greater than Shiva. Because according to Sanskrit, there are weights, units of weights. One is Shiva and one is Drona. So according to that unit of weight, a Drona is more heavier than Shiva. So he said, even a Drona is more heavier than Shiva. How can Lord Shiva be heavier, greater than Lord Narayana? So he really insulted them left and right. So when he heard that, he said, pluck their eyes out, blind them. Now that's worse than death, to live a life without eyes. And they were blinded. He was blinded like that. And they were sent back. And after he was blinded, it is explained that when he was brought back to the court of Tolu Tunga, they were folding their hands and they were thanking Tolu Tunga for having engaged them in the service of their guru, Ramanujacharya. He didn't say that, but he said, thank you for engaging me in the guru. That he was so grateful for. He was not envious of Tolu Tunga. He was not envious. So we see this such kind of remarkable, astounding, astonishing levels of tolerance in the in the lives of such great Vaishnava acharyas. And in contrast, we see today, the United Nations, working for world peace. We have more and more countries coming up. There are broken families. There are interreligious wars and Why all these, if you see statistics, so many, the violence is on the rise, criminal cases are going up. Why? Because of this one quality, that the tolerance levels in general of the people is going down. But you can see that in the topmost, in the fullest extent in the Vaishnav. So how do the Vaishnavs actually manage to actually develop such a great deal of tolerance? What is the secret behind their tolerance levels like that? So it is explained that a Vaishnava is tolerant because he sees everything as his own sinful reactions. He sees everything as his own sinful reactions. He doesn't blame God for it. He doesn't think that this thing has been done because of God. As it is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tattenu kampa susumikshamano gunjan evatma kritam vipakam jiveto yo mukti padesadhaya bhakya. The last verse is very important, that when one tolerates everything, all the reversals in his life, thinking that everything is actually the result of one's own sinful activities, and just tolerates it, expecting the mercy of the Lord, then only can he become eligible to the mercy of the Lord. He becomes eligible for liberation. That is important. We cannot change the nature of this world. The nature of this world is always there are going to be reversals. When the disciples of Srila Prabhupada were in Bombay and trying to build the Juhu temple, there was so much of problems, especially for Western body devotees to be in India and to construct temples, and there was so much of opposition and people were trying to break down the deities, the temples, and there's a big episode of the Juhu temple. So the disciples, they went to Prabhupada and said, "We cannot live here. It's too difficult for us." And Prabhupada just made one statement. "Don't you want to get purified? Don't you want to get purified?" So certainly all the reversals are seen as opportunities to serve the Guru and serve Krishna. And that is a very important principle. Like there is a pastime of a South Indian Alwar. His name was Pillai Alwar, and he wanted to learn the Bhagavad Gita. So he went to his guru and he knocked at the door. And the guru said, "Who's it?" So he said, "I have come." So the guru told him, "Come back when I am dead." So he said, "Come back when I am dead? What does that mean? I mean, how can I learn Bhagavad Gita when he's dead?" So he goes back to his father and he asks that, "My guru told me to come back when he's dead." So his father explained, he didn't mean to come back when he is dead. He told to come back when I is dead. When that I principle, that mamatvam, when that false ego is dead, that is the time when you can go and understand what is Bhagavad Gita. And we can see even in the Bhagavad Gita, Dhritarashtra is saying, "Mamaka pandavaschaiva kim akurvata sanjaya." He's asking Sanjaya, Dhritarashtra, that what is happening with me and my sons? And it is explained that by the Acharyas, that as long as Dhritarashtra was thinking about me and my children, he lost all his children. Whereas the Pandavas, they were free from the mamata, and he lived happily with all his brothers in Krishna consciousness. So that can happen when one is completely surrendered to the spiritual master and expects mercy of the spiritual master. So this is a very important principle of actually tolerating. Another very important principle is that he tolerates is because of the extreme compassion which is born out of their desire to serve. The tolerance born out of compassion. So we can see that in the lives of Srila Prabhupada, how when he was preaching and he took so many difficulties on his train. On the Jaluduta, he received 2 heart attacks and he suffered so much, and he preached. And even while he was preaching, he was so tolerant, because he was preaching to hippies. They were not very, they were not very civilized. So even while he was preaching, he was very tolerant. Why? Because he had so much of compassion. So, just like if a doctor is there, if he has to go to the asylum to treat some mad people. So, you know, in a asylum, naturally people are thinking that they are someone else. Like one madman is thinking that I am prime minister. One is thinking that I am road traffic officer, things like that, isn't it? So when a person, when a doctor goes into the asylum to treat the patients, you know, the people will abuse him, in fact, and they will tell him, what are you doing? Just get lost. And the doctor goes with the medicine and says, please take this. And the mad people will criticize the doctor and, you know, say all such kind of nonsense. But still, the doctor very patiently, tolerating all those, you know, abuses, he still insists that he takes the medicine. And he finds out ways such that this person can take a medicine. Like, for example, a person is thinking he's a politician and he's giving a lecture. You say, there's another group which is waiting for you out. Don't you want to prepare for your lecture? If you become healthy, you will be able to give a better lecture. So, yeah. So what should I do? Take this medicine and then you can go and give your lecture. I start thinking, wow. So he takes the medicines. So if the doctor starts thinking that, why should I tolerate? To hell with you, you are a madman. So of course he's a madman. But what is the doctor for? The doctor's there to preach. The doctor's there to actually give medication. So similarly, the preacher is there to preach. I mean, it's very easy to reject someone thinking that, oh, you know, I cannot tolerate him. But we can see that when Narada, he was abused, he did not leave that place. He waited till Daksha released all his anger so that he realized he made a mistake and then he can advance. So this was one of the qualities of patience and tolerance so that he could actually preach. Just like a mother when she takes care of her children. So when she takes care of her children, many times the children, you know, will actually slap the mother also. Or she'll pass stool and urine on the lap of the mother. But the mother doesn't dispose. Why? She doesn't say, what is this, what you're doing? Because the mother loves the son so much, children so much. So therefore, till the preacher does not have that much an affection and love for every conditioned soul, in connection with Krishna, it is not possible for making this endeavor to preach. Because preaching is a matter of compassion, not a matter of ambition. So therefore, it is very important that one has to have the quality of compassion. Only a compassionate person can truly preach. So we have to be tolerant. That is one of the requirements of... Therefore, it's said even in the Bhagavad Gita, Dambo darpo abhimanascha krodha parusham evacha ajnana chavi jatasya partha sampadam asurim. Like here it said, Titikshava karunika surida sarvadehina, that one of the sadhu's quality is Titikshava, is tolerant, and Dambo darpo abhimanascha krodha parusham evacha is the quality of the asuras. Very intolerant. That Dambo means pride. Abhimanas, conceit. Parusha means harshness, bitter tongue, you know, always insulting and speaking very strongly. Parusha mevacha, ajnana, and being always in ignorance of what is the real philosophy. Yadasya, par sampada asurim. The asuras have this quality. Now, the material conditioning is such that at least the conditioned soul likes to, you know, just be, you know, harsh, because we are in the material world, it's conditioned that if you are harsh, if you are assertive, and if you are bold, loud, then one is considered very confident. Wow, it's very good, but he's confident. And if you're tolerant, then it's not very good. You are having inferiority complex or something like that. So that is a conditioning to think like this. So this modern kind of a brainwashing is like this. Whereas Krishna speaks about just the opposite. He says one who is humble and gentle and who is tolerant is God, actually our divine qualities. He is actually more advanced. So we have to reprogram ourselves now. You know, just like in the self-excellence skills, this kind of example is given. You know, of a lady, you know, she's always unhappy, always miserable. So one someone asked her that, why are you always sad? Always whenever you see, you're sad. She says, what to do? You know, I have got two sons. One son is selling umbrellas and another son is selling sunglasses. So when it rains, I think about my son who's selling sunglasses and I feel very morose. And when it is sunny, I think about my son who's selling umbrellas and I think he's going out of business and I feel very morose. What to do? This man tells him, do one thing. When it rains, you think about the son who's selling umbrellas. And when it is sunny, you think of your son who's selling sun goggles. She says, really? Oh, I didn't know that. That's a good idea. So many times, by making a psychological adjustment, it needs to change things a little bit in order to, you know, come to the right perspective. And that's what it takes to actually just turn the things around a little bit and to start thinking that when we are tolerant, we are actually making advancement rather than thinking we are losing. When there's a crisis situation and there is someone who offends us, then it is actually a chance to think that, yes, I'm making advancement. I'm not a loser. I am actually making advancement. Convincing ourselves, I'm not a loser. Just like when there's a bank and there's a depositing going on, when someone is depositing money in our bank, we become very happy. Wow, my money stock is going up. Similarly, to think that, yes, actually, my bank balance is going up. My bhakti balance is going up. Because actually, to be happy or sad depends on how we perceive things ultimately. Isn't it? How we perceive things. It all depends on that. It's not exactly the stimulus, but actually how we perceive what is. So we have to think. Because we can always think like this. Okay, someone has offended us. We should think, wow, wonderful. That much karma has reduced, and rejoice. Rather than offending someone and thinking that much karma has reduced. So it all depends on how we perceive things, how we analyze it. So that's a psychological adjustment. People, if you see, people also tolerate. Outsiders also tolerate. Just like, you know, there's a story, we say this in anger management. How was a small boy who was very short-tempered. And he used to beat up all his friends in school. So mother used to tell him, why my son do you beat up these people like this? You should not do that. So what to do, my mother? When I get angry, I cannot control myself. I just hammer, that's all. That's all I see. Do one thing. When you get angry, just count to 10. And by that time, your anger will be subsided. So that's a good idea. So he comes back the next day with all bruises on his face. So what happened, my dear son? What to do? You told me to count up to 10. But that boy with whom I had a fight, his mother told him to count only up to 5. So this is the kind of so-called tolerance techniques which the materialists use in order to, you know. No, but it doesn't work. These are mechanical techniques. But nevertheless, devotees can actually apply this very wonderfully because they have the spiritual solution also. We use everything in Krishna's service. You know, we use mechanical, we use psychological, and we use spiritual. And what is that spiritual solution? The spiritual solution is actually to develop through surrender to Guru and Krishna. So difficulties are always going to be there. There is no doubt. Like when I went to Jagannath Puri, Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj actually tells a story about how a devotee's life is so full of problems. But he always tolerates it and he goes along. So one such story is of a great devotee of Lord Jagannath. So he was married. He was a very wealthy man. But he was so renounced that he gave all his property in charity and he became a pauper. So when he became a pauper, his father died out of shock. And he started thinking that, what should I do? Ultimately, Lord Jagannath is my master, my savior. I will go to Jagannath Puri and I will spend my time there in shelter of Lord Jagannath. And even if I die there, holy dham, I will become liberated. So he went. So, in the meanwhile, the parents of the daughter started thinking, this man has gone mad. He is irresponsible. He's left his wife and he's there. We will get our daughter married to someone else. He's become like an avadhuta, madman. So in the meanwhile, the parents, in-laws arrange the daughter to get married to another man. So this lady, she writes a letter to her husband in Jagannath Puri saying that my parents are arranging like that. So you please come back. I don't want to get married to anyone else. I'm already married to you. So if you don't come back, then I will commit suicide. So come back in 10 days because that's the time that they'll be getting me married. So he gets a letter in Jagannath Puri and he thinks that how is it possible for me to go back now? Because it takes more than 10 days to reach that place. Kalavati Kshetra, it's called as, where the in-laws were living. So he was so dependent on the Lord that he simply just went to the Lord and he expressed his helplessness. He said, what can I do now? So that night when he slept, Lord Jagannath explained, he could not tolerate the misery of his devotee. Lord Jagannath called for a vetal and transported him on a divine cot to Kalavati Kshetra. So when he woke up in front of his in-laws' house. So the in-laws opened the door and found him sleeping there. So they immediately brought him inside. They were a little disgusted because why did he come back? They didn't want him. So while they gave him good clothes, you know, and things like that, and giving him some good reception, but they were planning to kill him, to murder him, because they didn't want him to be along there. So they prepare some nice food, some cakes, and they put poison in the cake, and they give it to this person. So when he's eating the cake, his wife comes to know that he's being poisoned. So she leaves a note in the cake saying that there is poison in this. And by the Lord Jagannath's arrangement, he somehow, the first piece he takes contains that note. You know, that there is a poison in it. So he starts thinking, oh, there is poison in the cake. But it has been offered to Lord Jagannath. So I should eat it because it's Mahaprasad. So he goes ahead and he eats the Mahaprasad. And he dies. And the people open the door and they find him dead. And they think, very good, tomorrow we will, you know, throw him into the Ganges. So lock the door. Early in the morning when they open the door, he's wide awake. Lord Jagannath brings him back to life. They think this person is not an ordinary man. He's some great devotee of the Lord. So they bring the daughter to him and they say, all the best. She belongs to you. Do whatever you want. We will not interfere with your affairs. And that way, he leaves along with his wife. But the problem does not end here. Now the man with whom they had arranged her marriage becomes very disturbed. How is it that this person is going with our, you know, so-and-so girl? So they arrange for attacking these persons who are walking through the forest. So while in the forest, these people come in horsebacks and they attack him. And the girl implores to the husband, do something, do something. So he is very peaceful. He's not at all disturbed. He says, do what? He said, can't you see the situation? They'll kidnap me, they'll kill you. So he thought, who brought me to Kalavati Kshetra? He asked her. He said, Lord Jagannath. Who saved me from the poisoned cake? So he said, Lord Jagannath. So who do you think will come and save me at this troublesome time? So she naturally concluded, yes, it's Lord Jagannath. And no sooner did he say this, Baldev and Jagannath, they came on horsebacks as soldiers and appearing big-bodied, huge soldiers. And just by their appearance, all those soldiers, they became so frightened, they took an about turn and they left. And personally, Jagannath and Baldev escorted them to the outskirts of Jagannath Puri and released them. And problem doesn't end here. Problem doesn't end here. While they were serving, some Vaishnavas come into their home of this lady. And they think Vaishnav Seva is the topmost. So what she says, please stay at our home while we cook something for you. But because they were so poor, they didn't have anything in their house. So what happens is, she goes to a grocery shop and asks the grocery man that, please give me something. So this grocery guy, he thinks that, I want to enjoy this lady. So he says, I will give you whatever you want. You don't have money, but you should enjoy with me. When she says that, she becomes very offended. She comes back, tells her husband. Her husband says, never mind. You agree to the proposal, but serve Vaishnavas. Serving Vaishnavas is the topmost principle. So she agrees, comes back, prepares food, serves the Vaishnavas. And ultimately, the day comes when she has to actually... So she calls that man to her house. And the husband tells the wife, it seems, that don't worry, it's Krishna's arrangement. Serve him properly. And when she comes home and enters into the room, when he looks at this lady, he finds the lady sitting on the lap of Lord Jagannath. When he sees that immediately brings about a transformation in his heart. And he becomes completely purged of all desire. And the meanwhile, the husband is thinking, is my wife serving that man properly? And he comes and peeps. And he finds that this man is offering obeisances to his wife. And he says, what are you doing? What are you doing? So he said, I'm sorry. And he falls at the feet of this man and this lady and says that I really committed a big offense. But please, please forgive us. Forgive me. And that way he gets transformed. So we see that how pure devotees, their life is all full of troubles. But nevertheless, they transcend all these troubles by taking shelter of the Lord. Ultimately, because that is the only solution. As it is said, Trinadapi Sunichena Taroreva Sahishnuna, that the principle is to always be humble and then take shelter of the holy names of the Lord. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was commenting on the conflict in the Gaudiya Math, he said, Agun Jolbe, that there is fire in the mud, he said the only solution is Trinadapi Sunichena and then chanting the holy names. When one is free from material desires and takes shelter of the Lord, keeping the Lord as a center, Guru as a center of the all relationships and all interactions, then only can one actually transcend all the reversals in life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna. So please.